This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. First podcast of the month of May, and the sun is shining. Jason Botchford, although the black clouds of doom and gloom of the draft lottery remain over the Vancouver Canucks. We'll get into all of that. The podcast, as always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. If you're in the market for a vehicle, check them out. Check them out, the showroom. They got the big shiny showroom. And now as the weather's turning, you can get out on the lot. Go for a little spin, maybe top down, take a car for a demo. And if you can't get out to the lot and you want to start your search for a new vehicle, certainly check out the website, eagleridgegm.com, and say that you're big fans of the podcast, because we continue to get all sorts of feedback. And I've got a great feedback story to get to here as we work our way through today's podcast. But again, it's brought to you by eagleridgegm.com out in Coquitlam. Fifth overall, again, just like last year. History repeats itself.
Yeah, I mean, not bad.
Well, it's not good.
Could be better. Should have been better. Like, it's just crazy to me that the second worst team in the league, the chances of them drafting second overall are about roughly 1 in 10. Like, how does that make... Like, the system is flawed. I think the odds are flawed, and certainly I think too stacked in the favor of the teams that aren't in the bottom three. I don't think it should be that way. I think it was fine when you had a legit lottery for first overall, and then the rest of the chips flowed from there. Like, having the lottery for the top three picks is outrageous. It's not the NBA. Like, one player, very rarely, like, obviously McDavid and Matthews are huge exceptions to the rule. Generally, one player cannot be drafted second or first overall and make a huge difference on an NHL team. Like, there's just way too many variables, and there's way too many players, and they're playing it. They've set up a lottery like the NBA. It's nothing like the NBA. And if you're second worst in the league, by all odds, there should be a great likelihood that you draft second overall. That doesn't exist. That's my rant to start this off.
No, that's all right. I think there are a couple of ways that they could look at it. I don't think anything's going to change. I don't think the Vancouver Canucks are going to take this up as the cause now and, go banging on the doors of the NHL front office in New York. But 2 years in a row when they drop, I do think, and you could hear the disappointment in Trevor Linden's voice immediately afterwards, whether he put on the brave face and he talked about buying lottery tickets at a grocery store. Something tells me that doesn't happen with great regularity. But I wonder if, Philadelphia would still feel it was one of the big winners if they had bumped up five spots. Like, I wonder if you could cap how high a team, how far teams can drop. Could you cap how high they could jump so that they still improve their draft stock considerably?
Right.
But it doesn't throw the entire thing out of whack because, and we're a pretty savvy fan base here in Vancouver. I would have to think most people realized that when Philadelphia, when their card didn't appear, and then, when Dallas's card wasn't there when it was supposed to be, and then ultimately New Jersey, at that point, all three of those have won. Well, Colorado can't drop any lower than fourth. Like, you didn't take until the Canucks card was revealed to know that they were going to get fifth for the second straight year. So, no question, it's a flawed process. And, what can you do about it? I guess if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you always hear about the fix being in. Francesco Aquilini was in the room. He watched the ping pong balls as they were pulled out of the hopper.
You could see him in there.
I watched the video last night. I was just curious. Because, the league wants to make sure that this is on the up and up, and yet you still hear from all the conspiracy theorists out there that maybe this draw did never take place. So I don't think this was conducted on some sort of Hollywood soundstage. I think it was done there in another room in the Sportsnet studios.
You do concede it would be easy to fix it if they wanted to. And the NHL
fix the overall process or just the actual showing of the...
Whatever you want. Like, if the league wanted to present itself like, as you say, like everything's fair, this is a legit lottery, it would be easy to manipulate it so that it could look like that, yet the lead, I'm not saying that that's what happened. I'm just saying it would be easy to fool you and whoever else well, is out there. So you're like, yeah, this is totally fair. And the NHL has a super shady history of doing all kinds of shitty things to orchestrate different outcomes. So I honestly wouldn't put it, I don't think that it's happening, but I would not put it, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that the fix is in and they're tricking guys like you into like buying into, oh, Aquilini was there and look at the numbers come up and amazing this is.
These are my two favorite parts about this, and I invested 13 minutes of my time last night. The video is out there.
Right.
Button down, casual looking Gary Bettman. He's sort of the game show host as he's walking everybody through this. You see these videos sometimes of like hostage takers, and they get the captive person has to hold up that day's newspaper to indicate that, this is, look, you can see, I can't fake today's, that's how you authenticate things. If you're a hostage taker, this is turning into how to be a hostage taker 101 for you. But you got to get the captive to hold up the newspaper. So there are.
You realize again, you could fake a newspaper, right? Like.
Well, you can't fake the stories on that all day. Right. Like, it's pretty tough. I don't think they're going. Work with me because they're on the desk of the two guys from Ernst & Young, and we think they were from Ernst & Young. At least that's what we were told. But they're on the table in the room with Gary Bettman, two Toronto dailies from right that there. Day. So they've gone like the hostage taker route to prove, to verify that all this is going down. But if you don't believe that,
right,
then. You have to believe this because Gary Bettman, he instructs the camera to pan around the room.
Right.
And one of the first people you see on this video is Drancer. Like, think about this. Butch, a year ago at this time,
right.
He's hammering out stories for Sportsnet. He's writing a book. He's pulling the strings at Canucks Army. He's got a bunch of other things going on in his life that ultimately we now know have led to, this executive career down in Florida. But a year ago, he was one of us. He was one of us.
Yeah.
And there, as the camera pans, not 20 feet from the commissioner conducting some of the most serious business in the National Hockey League, Drancer, like,
not just Drancer in there. Like, he's one of the few guys in one of the big lounge chairs,
right.
Fully suited up.
Completely.
Leg crossed, leaning back. Like, it when you, I only saw the pic. I haven't seen the video. But when you see the pic, it's like he's there. Of course he's there. He's there every year.
Right.
He's the guy that's in the room with Bettman and Aquilini and all the great powers of the NHL. There he is. He's got the poof in his left pocket. And there's other guys sitting on the floor. There's other guys standing. There's other guys in like worse chairs. He's got the greatest chair with this like great layout of food in front of him. He looked like a king. He did.
Right.
And it's hard to believe that almost a year ago, it's me and you eating wings in Buffalo and he's in jorts.
And, like, and I can't right. believe. And couldn't get through the velvet rope that night in Buffalo.
They wouldn't let him in.
And yet here he is in like almost the most exclusive company in the National Hockey League.
It is. It's
just holding court. Draft.
It is there's nothing much more exclusive than here's our secret draft lottery thing. We're telling everyone that it's on the up and up. And these are the people that are going to make sure we're on the up and up. And if I were the NHL and I was trying to prove that everything was good and there was no, hinky shit going on, I would point to Drancer. I would suspect that, okay, here's a guy that was in the media. He's, kind of respected, renowned for being honest and, his takes usually unbiased. And now he's one of the guys that's going to observe and make, but the thing with Drancer is he'll go whatever wave, you know what I mean? If the NHL hired him, he would do NHL spin, right? Like he's all in on wherever he is.
So I got a great kick out of this. I did. Like, again, I'm just thinking to myself, a year ago, he's slumming with us, and here he is now, one of, like, the chosen 12 or 13 in there watching, verifying all this. My only disappointment from this was, so the camera spins around, and there's Drancer in his armchair, and Francesco Aquilini about 20 feet away from Drancer, and there were some others there that I didn't recognize, But the camera does a complete 360, comes back to the commissioner, who says, all right, we're about to get going. Are there any questions? And I was sure that Dranser was going to have a bunch of questions. Like, put the commissioner in his place, you know, tell him how this thing is going to go down. That really, like, for that moment, I thought Dranser had his chance to be commissioner for a minute. Like, he could have been the most powerful man in that room.
Were there any questions at all? None.
No.
No, wow.
Away they went, and the balls bounced, and
so you saw the balls bounce in this in the 13-minute video, and you came away convinced that this is legit.
And I have not contacted Rancer yet to verify all that I saw on this video as my man on the inside. Right. But I just love the fact that we have a man on the inside. The other one that came out of the draft, the reveal itself was, and it happened last year. And it happened again this year. And just way too much shit's being made of the Canucks were one digit away.
Aren't multiple teams one digit off, though? I think that multiple teams are one digit off.
Every year, teams are going to have that ticket. There's going to be a ticket on each side of the winning. And so, it's a lottery.
It gets added to the list, though. I mean, I think multiple teams are end up being one digit off. I don't think. Just the Canucks.
No, it wasn't at all.
That are one digit.
And
off.
I remember last year Montreal, like they had one of those tickets that went one.
Yeah.
I think they lost. Jersey won. You lost. That's how a lottery works. You have to have the exact numbers. And so again, these people I've seen stories written about it. And people screaming, tweeting in all caps. That's
I don't worry about the one digit off, but you do admit like it's flawed in the way it's weighted. Like it's completely unfair.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Okay. But
And it's absurd. Like three spots up for grabs in the lottery. Like it's just. There's no point to it. It's just I don't get it. Like I don't get why they have to go to these extremes. And the biggest problem is it doesn't flow with the rest of the history of the NHL. Like it's never been like this, and now it's like this. And I think Lyndon has said it multiple times where this will be the norm now, where teams not in the bottom three will be lofted up to the bottom three, and I think just that gets away from the spirit. Of the whole thing. And there's teams that are going to tank and there's teams that are going to be bad, but the NHL is set up that way. Like they have like a tank date imprinted in the calendar season every year, trade deadline day. The have-nots give all the shit that they have to the haves. They are tanking for the rest of the season.
Yep.
And that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, and then you get a team like Philadelphia that stays in the push for the playoffs right down to the wire.
So if you want to take away tanking, say no trades after October 15th. And there's no trades after October 15th, and you won't get tanking. Or at least that'll have a far greater impact on whether teams tank or not than, your lottery and your three spots, having them all up for grabs with everyone having 10, 12, 8, 7%.
And I hate that idea. I don't hate your idea, but I hate the idea of no trades because, and we saw it again this year with the Canucks, like nothing gets people talking.
Right.
Nothing
gets
people
talking. It was honestly the only thing to look forward to over the course of the season.
And the weeks leading up to, and then, that night of intrige against, was it against San Jose? Who was the game against? No. Hansen got traded. It was the Islanders, I think, were in. And, he gets the late scratch from the game and what's going on. And, the game meant nothing. And there was way more intrigue in what was going on with Hansen. Where was he going to wind up? And ultimately we got our answers.
Because for the bad teams, that's sometimes all there is to talk about. And how much in the weeks leading up were we consumed in talking about, are they going to trade Burrows? And guess what's going to happen next year? It's going to be, are they going to trade the Sedins? Are they going to trade Tanev? And are they going to trade whichever free agent that they, Ryan Miller or whomever they sign this summer?
Well, I can tell you that will they trade Tanev? That talk won't happen because it's going to happen here this summer. It's going down. The Tanev deal's coming.
You believe in that?
I don't know.
I talked to them about this.
I want to believe it's going down.
I've pitched this to them, like personally.
PowerPoint?
Multiple times. And they are at least open to it conceptually. They don't want to do it, and I think I'm going to write about all this today, but they don't want to do it because I've said this before here. They don't want a team where everyone shows up and they know that they're going to lose, and they're going to lose a lot of these games 4-1. And they think that that will be debilitating for the players, which, it may be, but Tanev is a, like, we are at peak Tanev.
Absolutely.
Right now. We're getting there right now.
1,000%.
With everyone, all of, you know, just gushing and tongue bathing, the Oilers and the trade for Larson. And we're just at the point in the Tanev career where another injury filled season. And I think that he is going to be known as the injury guy. He's not there yet. He's not really, like, he's still the guy that grits out the injuries and plays on the, you know, broken foot and all of that stuff. But he is close to the sallow edge. And when you have so many injuries over a short period of time, or 5 or 6 years, and you become known as, like, the Sammy Sallow, a lot of the value is going to be lost. Plus, we know that there's trade restrictions on him. You know, he gets the no trade after July 1, all of those things. But we're heading into a period of time where in free agency, there's no defenseman available. Guys like Tanev are more coveted than they have ever been before. He moves the puck. He's very adept at moving the puck. He's a great defensive defenseman. This is peak Tanev. Like, this is the time to do it. And there's, like, a club of us, the Trey Tanev people. And the first rule is you talk about trading Tanev as much as you freaking can. Like, you bring it up on Twitter. You talk about it on social media. If you're doing the podcast, you bring it up here. You write about it, which I will be writing about it later today. Like, that is the rule. Like, I hear Bruff on Curtain Blog Radio. I think they bring it up every week. Like, he's got the trades all lined up. Here's what we want from the Leafs. Here's what we want for, like, he's got it all. Like, you talk about this all the time. And hopefully the Canucks will realize that the best course of action is going to be trading this man.
Right. And I look at Tanev as a trade chip, as, you know, the good teams, the really good teams, the teams that are close should be interested, because, you know, he's the kind of guy, a lot of these good teams already have, you know, a true number one defenseman that roams all over the ice and does good things, a lot of good things offensively. Tanev minds the store, like, he's that guy. He might be that last sort of piece that a good team could use to get them to the next level, maybe over the hump. Now, this time of year, you know, the teams that get eliminated from the playoffs, right? Like the sad GM that had the high hopes that, right, you know, what does my team need? Like, that's the guy, yeah, that you get on speed dial.
Yeah.
You know,
because the big thing is going to be, how did the Oilers do it? How did they? And one of the big answers that's being pushed, one of the big narratives being pushed, is that the Larson trade was a huge turning point for the Oilers. Never mind, like, they just ignore that McDavid,
right,
is, like, virtually the LeBron of the NHL and can carry shitty rosters into the playoffs. But now this, like, it look, McDavid hasn't been dominant. It hasn't been regular season McDavid. So how are the Oilers winning all of these games? And a lot of people are pointing to Larson, which in turn will lead to a lot of those GMs you're talking about saying, get me a Larson.
We got one right here in Vancouver.
And it is crazy, the amount of discussion around Adam Larson. Like, it just, it shows you how little the Oilers have had on their blue line for the better part of a decade, that all of a sudden this guy now is it. Like, yeah, he's the reason they are where they are. As you said, forget McDavid and everything that he has done. You brought it up last week, and you just brought it up again there in the Canucks, and this idea that, you know, they don't want to lose 4-1. And I meant to ask you last week, but I didn't. Which end of that scoreline concerns the Canucks more? Is it the giving up four, or is it the scoring, scoring just one?
I think they're okay with scoring just one. No. They seem to be okay with the scoring. No. I think it's the losing by three goals. Like, they don't want to be the team where everyone shows up in the morning and they realize they don't have a chance. But realistically, really, they don't have a chance whether Tanev's on the team or not. And any boost, they actually, like, next year's draft is pretty loaded at the top. Like, next year's the year to legitimately not be good and hope to get a real difference maker at the top of the draft. They seem to be okay with the one goal, although, you know, I was told they are going to look at free agents to bolster the scoring. So I don't I don't think that means guys like Oshie and, you know, Radulov, guys are going to command 6x6 contracts like Erickson got. But they are going to look to add guys, hopefully on short-term deals. I mean, if they are serious about the rebuild, that's what you do without trade restrictions. And I think that most people would be fine with something like that. But they're going to lose a lot of games because they're going to be thin. There's going to be, like, it's just going to be the same thing over again. And there's not enough talent coming. Tanev is the best chip to me that they've ever had, other than Kessler. Like the Kessler trade has not aged well. Like, you look at the guys that they ended, the four kind of veterans that they ended up with, it's not gone great. And that, like, you still look at him dominating. You still look at him he's one of the engines that's driving the Ducks, one of the best shutdown centers. I think he was a finalist for the Selke again. Like, they should have got way more future for Ryan Kessler. It's just the reality. They've got some good trades. Some trades have worked out. That one has not. Tanev is their one. That's the makeup move. And they don't have to worry right now. He's the one guy that they don't have to worry about him controlling the process. They control the process. They can put him out there on that email blast Jim wants to send out to everyone and just say the highest bidder gets this guy. And this guy, you see Larson, this guy's better than Larson. Get him and get to the cup.
And I've seen an awful lot of people connecting the dots here because Bob McKenzie had tweeted out something fairly cryptic about not saying it, but wouldn't be surprised if Jonathan Drouin is available and or moved ahead of the draft. And then, of course, the Canuck Nation up in arms. And, you know, now it's Tanev for Drouin and maybe a plus in there somewhere else. Probably not on the Tampa side, but maybe, now the Canucks have this fifth pick to play with. I do think,
I would not trade that fifth pick. Just...
Neither would I. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think when you're 28th one year and 29th the next, I mean, you have to be open to exploring absolutely everything. And let's be honest here, Botch. If they had won the draft lottery, it would have been a great day for the Canucks, and the organization and the fan base would have had some fun on Saturday, and it would have been boring as shit for the next 2 months. Right? If they had, hey,
Well, it would have been Hischier, Patrick.
I guess, but how many stories can you write about Fitzpatrick one day, Hischier the other?
A lot more on the table now.
Yeah, so this gives us things to talk about. So selfishly, from a podcast perspective and radio and print and everything else, like finishing fifth or falling to fifth, again, not the worst thing in the world. But if you're the Canucks, is Jonathan Drouin a guy that... you make a priority. Absolutely.
It depends on what the call. I think that they have to be in the mode. Like you say, it's 28th and 29th. Everyone has to be realistic. Like, they get mad when we're negative about the team. But the team, it's been really bad for 2 years in a row. And you have to realize, in 3 out of 4, you have to realize that they have to be in the collection mode. Collecting assets. Collecting young players. Collecting draft picks. Drouin is not the fifth, and something else for Drouin is not going to solve the problems that the Canucks have. I think that there should be ways about completing that trade as Tanev as the centerpiece, where you can get that done and keep the fifth overall pick. That's the way I would approach that.
So does that mean you would then be open to at least considering using the fifth pick on a defenseman and trading Tanev to address your scoring woes?
Yeah, I have no, if honestly, you have to trust the board. Like, generally, it hasn't proven successful in the NHL to draft D. Like, just generally, drafting D has been more difficult to get right early in drafts than drafting centers. So I do see the argument that all things are equal, or if things are close, go with the center, go with the more sure thing. But I think the Canucks should follow their board. I mean, they should trust the process, trust the scouts, and trust Benning and all of those things. And if they have a D at 5 that they've ranked significantly better than any of the centers on the board, which I think that some are making the argument that that could be the case, yeah, you get the D. One of the most absurd ideas of the entire season has been that the D is set. It's luxurious and it's set. dudes, there is no scoring coming from this defense. And Yule Levy, you can't expect him to be the answer to the scoring woes on that D. Like, they do need badly an offensive-minded defenseman that hopefully one day can be a 40-point guy, a 45-point guy. Like, they need that guy, to me, as much as they need a center.
Right, because Edler's not getting any better. Alex Edler can still play a bunch of minutes. Alex Edler will have his good nights, but he's not getting better as a player. Like, Nick Lidstrom started winning Norris trophies at this age. This isn't going to happen for Alex Edler.
That was the old Edler say, like when he struggled earlier in his career, everyone would always say, well, Lidstrom, not till 31. He wasn't winning any Norris trophies. You got to wait till he's 31. Well, we've waited, and like, there's no something changed. Like, I haven't looked at the data on this, but it just feels watching him that something changed in that Tortorella year, and we've never got the old, and maybe it's the back, and maybe it's like, you know, the amount of playing time and all of the, like, I'm sure that there's a lot of physical things that came into play. Like, he's just not, like, he went on a 4 or 5 year run where he was averaging 40 points, and he's just not that guy anymore. He's just not going to be able to do that. I would like the team to try to get, you know, Drouin aside, if that's not possible, I would like the team to try to get 2 first-round picks and try to get both a center and a defenseman in the first round this year. And you know, using Tanev and getting a package, whatever it may be, I think that you could be able to do that.
And I put the fact that we were doing the podcast today out on Twitter and said, hey, if you've got questions, and so many people, you know, they want our opinion on, you know, what are the Canucks going to do at 5? I can't speak for you. I will admit, as I sit here right now, like, I'm no draft expert. Like, my life is focused on the Vancouver Canucks at this level and a trickle down through Utica and the system. But as far as, you know, and I lived 5 full years traveling around on a bus with a junior hockey team. And I guess that kind of shaped my view on, like, I think you have to see these prospects play and play a ton to be able to write the book on what they are. So I'm not going to try and BS anybody here. I get my information from the people that I trust, people that I talk to. I read the same thing, though, that are available to fans on so many of these players. But as I sit here right now, like, I can't give you the goods firsthand on any of them. I mean, they're names to me, and I've seen video highlights, and I've seen a few games on TV here and there.
Right.
But this has sort of become an industry now of a lot of people that claim to be experts, and to me, it just kind of muddies the water a little bit here because you're getting so much information about these players. But, I mean, the names are the names, and whether it's Gabe Vilardi or Casey Mittelstadt or Cody Glass, guys.
You know a few of the breadcrumbs, okay?
Like, yeah,
you
sure, no question.
For example... We essentially know, it's a good educated guess, that if they had one, they were going to go with Hischier over Patrick. That's what a lot of us, or some of us with knowledge of the situation, believe, that that's the direction they would have gone. They've scouted Glass a number of times this year. They really do like Glass.
And there's dots to be connected there. The whole Portland connection. And now with Travis Green, I mean, that's just another layer. So you're right.
And he's got speed.
Right. And we've talked about how predictable this organization is. So just keep that in mind.
And Jim did a personal visit to go to Green Bay to watch Mittelstadt. And he really likes Mittelstadt. So these are some of the things that we know. We also believe, or some people around the team have been talking about, them being really into Liljegren. Who seems to be the most polarizing prospect in the draft. Is certainly in the top 15 picks, and if he goes top 10 or not, like, there's a big debate on where he might go. And some of that's what we're hearing, and some of that's Jim talked about him earlier this year and said publicly, he's a cornerstone guy. This is the power play guy that you can build a team around. And then he's also said, if the power play guy is there, we want the power play guy. So I think that though it's fair to kind of focus on those three guys right now as possibilities. And you're right, the team tends to telegraph their moves because they don't have the wait a sec guy or the are we sure guy. Like, there's just, like, I would have both of those. I would have a wait a sec guy and an are we sure guy, both in the organization. They don't have either. So they get their mindset on something and people tend to know. And it ends up usually working out how a lot of us expect it to work out. I do know from talking to Jim for sure, like, playmaking at center is a huge deal. And we know that a power play defenseman is a big deal. Like, those are the two kind of cornerstone things that they're looking for, because they know all these guys, someone's got to get Besser the puck. Someone's got to get Vertanen the puck. Someone's got to get Dallin the puck. And someone's got to get Goldobin a puck. Like, actually, Goldobin is one of the few wingers that they have who can make plays. It actually makes him pretty critical to the development and where they're going, because he's a great, like, he sees the ice great and he's a great passer. Playmaking center, power play quarterback on D. So I think that those are the two big things that they're going to be looking for at the top of this draft. And I also think that, all things equal, they're going to be looking, they realize that they need speed in this lineup.
Sure.
And they're looking for that at the top.
Right. But I just don't want to BS listeners, if the people, and there were a lot of questions about, you know, which guy. I'm just telling you that I don't come to the PatCast, I don't come on the radio with any, you know, great, I don't have the secret channel of information about the prospects themselves.
Right.
I get most of my information from the people that I talk to, and there are enough people that I trust that are out there, you know, watching these guys play three and three nights and play at home, but play on the road as well, and the different matchups and all that kind of stuff. Plus all the reading, but that same reading material, again, I don't have proprietary reading material. You know, it's out there and it's available, and that's how I sort of formulate my opinion. So, I will continue to,
and also, you know, what work Jim on says, like, Jim, well, is pretty revealing.
I mean, he helps us in that. Like, I don't have to.
Like, he's pretty revealing when you ask about this stuff.
Right. So if there's 20 prospects, you know, you don't have to get the book on all of them, because he will point you in the direction of those three or four that you need to know about. Now, I was there at Rogers Arena on Saturday. We were hosting this special draft lottery show on the radio. Sakaris was working on a Saturday. We put him to work on a Saturday. But we were in the sports bar, and the place was packed. And, you know, there was cautious optimism, right? Like, these are Canuck fans. It's draft lottery. Got hosed last year, right, so it can't happen again. Right. And the room was popping. Like, you know, people were, they were pumped. They were there. They wanted to celebrate together. And then they brought Travis Green in, and they introduced him to the masses to a great roar. He got the big, you know.
Oh, he did?
Oh, yeah. Oh, big reaction. And then we had a chance. We chatted with him again.
And you asked him, what did you ask? You asked him about analytics?
Well, it was one of the things that didn't get asked in the introductory press conference. And I was just curious, and I, you know, writing for Canucks Army and the interest there, that I wanted to see kind of where he fell in that regard. And, you know, one of the things that he talked about was just how excited he was with all of the information available to coaches and anybody in the National Hockey League that isn't available in the American Hockey League. So he talked about how, you know, he had assessed Utica in sort of three-game stints, but really just didn't have the information to drill down deep. But he says he's open to it. He's excited about it. He wants to explore it.
See, Willie was not open to this, and that's one of the reasons that – the Canucks don't have an extensive analytic, you know, not one of the huge analytics departments. And I think part of that is, what's the point if you have a coach that's not going to listen to it, not pay attention to it? So I think it's super encouraging that they have a coach who is open to all that stuff, because it can give you huge advantages. And I think, you know, when you break down how successful, and he was really successful. Like, I think that Travis is a really good coach. I know that it didn't, like, I had this, like, we all knew Green was going to get hired any day, right? So I'm sitting there with Kuz, and I go, like, what are we going to do? We got to come up with something, get him ready when he gets hired. And I said, like, why don't I do, like, I'll do a hypothetical, five reasons it may not work out. You do a hypothetical, five reasons why this is going to be successful, right? And, you know, that's kind of how I wrote, like I said, like, I repeated what we've talked about. I said, no one can know how this is going to translate. And in fact, I didn't say this, but the odds are it's not going to work. Like, the first time coach on a bad team, generally it doesn't pan out, right? So I said, if it doesn't work out, here could be five of the reasons why, and experience and, you know, developing players and all that stuff, all the stuff the jury's out on. And then the web desk put this headline on it, like, Jason Botchford's five reasons Travis Green is going to be a bust as a head coach. And it was like they dropped me into the fucking jungle. The, like, there's
snake pit.
No, yeah, there's like this gang, like the anti-tank mafia or the half glass full gang, like they swarmed me, right? And I wasn't going to throw the headline right under the bus. I got called a clown by that Ricky guy, and him and I were going back and forth, and it was like I was taking shots from everywhere. And like they want to paint me as the big negative spin guy, but like I don't think you'll find a bigger Troy Stetcher fan than me. I was a huge Trampkin guy. Like, I'm a big Bo Horvat believer. I'm one of the Vertanen truthers from last season who believes he had a really good underrated year. My takes are not all negative. And this particular one was just a hypothetical. It's not how I see Travis Green. I see him as a really good coach and a good bet by the Canucks, probably the best bet that they could have made. And if you look at the raw data from his Utica teams, score adjusted, unblocked shot attempts this past season, they controlled most of the possession, over 50%. The 2 years previous, when he had kind of decent teams, they were top three in the league. It suggests to me that he can make a percentage point difference because he didn't have centers. He didn't have top defensemen. He didn't have much talent. And he extracted a lot, and they controlled play. This past year, that was one of the shittiest minor league teams the Canucks have ever put together. And the fact that he was able to control play with that team suggests to me, like, this is a really good bet by the Canucks that he's a good coach who may one day be a great one. Like, there's very few guys that can have a Babcock effect. And the best coaches, some believe, can make the impact of a really good second line player, like that kind of difference. Babcock can do it. Maybe Green can do it. So I'm not negative on Green. Like, I do think he can be a really good coach, and I'm super jacked that he's open to things like the analytics.
Yeah. And he talked about, the home plate chances. You hear that an awful lot, but he also talked about, denying zone entries and talk about breaking up forechecks and those types of things that, we never heard those words come out of the mouth of the last head coach. So again, it's tiny, but it indicates, a step, I think.
He said zone entries?
Yep. He uttered the word zone entries. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Now, that would never be, you'd never hear that from Willie.
Now, don't get me started on the you're so negative, because you don't have a monopoly on that sort of feedback. Exactly. Trust me. But I will say this. This was funny about that piece you wrote last week, because it was posted before Kuz's. Right? Like, it was a yin and yang thing, right? Like, yeah. the two of
that
them.
That we agreed to beforehand.
Right, but yours was posted first, so I saw it first, and, like, I saw the headline, and the headline may as well have said, Jason Botchert hates Travis Green. Like, that's kind of how I was like, holy crap, like, this guy hasn't been introduced yet, and Botch hates him, but I didn't realize that it was you taking one side, and then I saw Kuz's piece come, but in that moment, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. Like, I wanted a headline like, five reasons this may not work out, and five reasons
Botch hates Travis Green.
So, man, I got, like, it. They came in waves, man. And, like, it's hard, and those moments when they're just coming at you, like, one after the other. And, like, it's like, yeah, I block some people when there's only so much, I can take. And, then they're mad I blocked people. And I'm like, man, like, you guys are exhausted. Like, I try to take all the comers, but it's exhausting. And it was.
PacCast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. April was truck month. I don't know what May is. Have to get the update here. But I mean, it's kind of top down as the weather turns. Get a deal on a convertible. We did the show there live. They had the super slick. Was it a Corvette? I think it was a Corvette. Way out of my price range, but top down looked like
maybe one day.
Yeah,
when the kids are away in college or when graduated.
When the PacCast reaches that level, right? When it gets to that level. But check them out. See what's in the showroom. See what's on the lot. Start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. And I will say there is talk of perhaps a return engagement live podcast.
Oh, wow.
From the showroom floor, or maybe we'll do it out in the lot on a sunny day at Eagle Ridge GM.
And you ran into a huge fan.
A couple things about this draft lottery party. Yeah. One was, again, just to be in that moment of the reveal and then just the letdown. And, like, talk about the air getting sucked out of a room. You and I know there wasn't a whole lot of reason to celebrate at Rogers Arena, certainly in the second half of this season. This kind of even took that to another low. Like, these people were there, and I think, again, low bar, anything above five would have been seen as, yeah, you know, right, somewhat of a success. But no, five. Right. And the music that was thumping and the you know, just the feel in that room, gone. Done. It was over at that point. It was done. People just heads down, ate the food they had ordered and got on their way, went out into the town on a Saturday night. So it was, I mean, I would like to have seen what the room would look like had they won the draft lottery and been number one, but crazy. Maybe next year. There's always next year. But yes, the silver lining. So it wasn't all doom and gloom, because as we were packing up at the end of this show, two guys approach the table from which we were broadcasting. And the one guy extends his hand and says, hey, nice to meet you. Big fan of the podcast. Keep up the good work. And I'm like, hey, cool. Yeah, thanks so much for listening, all that kind of stuff. And then he sort of elbows his buddy and he says, I got this guy hooked on the podcast 2 weeks ago. And the other guy's like nodding his head like, yeah. Guy says, get this. The guy says, yeah, I've binged the entire season of the podcast in the last 2 weeks, and it's been awesome. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that would be pretty cool, actually, to relive the Canucks season. And I would highly recommend this to any of our listeners if you want to go back. But think about this guy. He's late to the game here, but he said he was a big Canuck fan. So, like, he understood the storylines, but then to live through the season compressed into 2 weeks of binging the podcast, I like that idea. Yeah, I'm going to suggest that to anybody that hasn't caught our drift yet.
Yeah.
It's not too late. You
maybe get the podcast on Netflix and people can binge on their Friday, Saturday nights.
Well, you think of binging on Netflix, I hadn't really thought of the podcast just sitting there episode after episode. Just like,
are there cliffhangers? Like, do we have things that are like, tune in next week and we'll give you the answer?
Not now. I've got another podcast to listen to. Bring me more podcasts. So we thank those guys, whether he's been there all season or the newcomer to the podcast. We love our listeners. And I should say, again, we get terrific feedback, whether it's live in person, on social. And we're trying to build this thing. And, you know, again, there's an insatiable appetite for Canuck information. So appreciate the support. If you want to retweet it, that would be great. Rather than just hitting like, you know, spread the word. Help us spread the word. Because, again, I mean, it's crazy times right now in the media market here, and only getting crazier with the addition of another sports radio station. Right, so we're sort of, you know, pushing through the clutter. But
sports radio station coming. And maybe, I don't even know what's going to happen at 10:40.
Nor I. You're looking at me, but I don't have the answers there. All I know is that the podcast is going to push on here through the summer. And look, we haven't even, like, we talked all about the draft lottery. We just mentioned Travis Green, but we did this last week before he had been introduced. So we have not sat at these microphones since he was trotted out there and propped up, and Jim on one side, Trevor on the other. But really, it was the Travis Green show. It was his big day, the way it should have been. I thought he conducted himself beautifully. I don't think he'll have an easier day on the job. I'll say that. There are no wins or losses to be had that day.
But he's really good with the media. He's going to be really, like, he will give you, like, real answers with analysis and opinion, and he will go in depth on certain players and certain situations. Like, he is really going to do well kind of selling the program, I think, a lot better. He's going to be a huge improvement on articulating his plan going forward than Willie ever was. Like, that was not a Willie strong. Like, Willie was bad. Like, it was just bad the first year. He had a really hard time kind of communicating where he was coming from all season long. He improved, and by the end, he was vastly different than real good Willie from that first year. But Travis Green is another level. I'm convinced, like, the Panthers, for instance, like, the teams that were interested in, one of the things that I would bet that there's other small market teams that were after him, because I think that he would do a great job of selling the game and selling his players and selling his program in those markets.
And you and I have both been to enough of these introductory press conferences where usually it's nothing but bouquets and everything's great.
Yeah.
My takeaway from that day, and I thought good on him, didn't try to sugarcoat, didn't try to spin away from all of the negative. I mean, he embraced the fact that he's inheriting a crappy hockey team right now, and right. and I think he has a sense I think of you, knowing how much work is ahead of him.
Yeah, I think that you asked one of the first questions about scoring, and he said, yeah, like he basically copped to scoring's going to be really difficult for this team. And I, it, that, that produced one of the answers that a lot of us hooked on was him talking about creating goal scoring without having necessarily having the goal scorers. And I took from that. I talked to him later about it and he, you know, wink, wink. Yeah. Yeah. Like I think they are going to be more aggressive around the goal line unless Jarvis steps in and gets his way. They're going to attack the opponent's net below the goal line, around the goal line, stuff that Willie's team just was too passive to do, certainly in the last 2 years of Willie. So I am expecting, like, that's going to be a pretty critical thing. How do they play? How do they try to produce goals? And they're going to need to. Like, this is unacceptable for, you know, to be second last in goals, which they've been the last 2 years combined. They're going to have to produce goals. There, I don't care, like, how much people say the only way the Canucks are going to win is trap it up, low event hockey. No, they're going, he's going to have to try to score because you're going to lose the market. You're, I mean, if you continue to be 29th in goals, you are going to, more and more fans are going to peel off and you're going to lose more and more of the market.
And so, again, it's fine to say all the things that he said at an introductory press conference. It's April. You know, we don't start to see results until September and then when they start playing for keeps in October. But fine that he says we're going to attack the net and play down low. You know, who's going to attack the net? Who's going to crash the net? Like, are Daniel and Henrik all of a sudden going to crash? Like, you know, that's the challenge now is.
No, but Daniel and Henrik can play below the goal line, around the goal line. A lot of, like, we didn't see a lot of that. Like, their cycle game was gone.
Yep.
This past season. And that's one of the other things I said to him. Like, who's going to play? Like, what's the characteristic of the guy who's going to play with the Sedins? Because under Willie, after Verbata, it was, I want a defensive guy there. I want to, you know, shore them up defensively. And he, the first thing he said, it's got to be a skilled guy. Like, we'll see if that pays off and whether that's Besser or how this translates. Because all these guys talk big on the first day. The first couple. Like, when I heard Tortorella, I was like, you know, I was ready to run through cinder block. Like, it sounded amazing. It was like, I'm getting more out of the Sedins and I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna have like a great power play and, you know, all of these guys are gonna be in the best shape of their lives and I'm gonna get so much out of them. Like, it's gonna, you know, that extra 5% is all coming. And I sat there and believed them. And then when the season started and the Sedins were playing 22 minutes a game and they were killing penalties, I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, this is not going to last. Like, this is crazy. And he's playing his fourth line, like, 3 minutes. Like, it made no sense when to see it unfold the way it did. But when you, like, he's a great salesman. Like, I can, you know, he's in, I don't think there's many coaches that have a better pitch than Torts does. And it was sheer wreckage over the course of that season. So I believe in Green right now. I believe he's got a good plan, but how that unfolds and translates in the fall, like, we're a long way from that. And we're like, there's many steps that have to go for people to really believe that he's got a handle on this team then.
Who are you kidding? You hate Travis Green. I read that in the paper last week, Jason. The other news that has come out here in the last, 24 hours or so is that our good friend, remember Nikita Trampkin?
Yeah.
You remember Nikita Trampkin? A lot of people thought, oh, maybe he would just go back for a year. Word is a 3-year contract with his KHL team.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a little troubling.
He did not have, you know, I guess that depends on the out. There could be out clauses for the NHL, all of that kind of stuff. But look, the more I look into this, the less fun I find that Trampkin had in his season here. You know, from what I've heard and what I understand, that he had a lot of legitimate beefs with the way that he was treated. You can argue that, you know, he should have given it another shot with the new coaching staff, but he had a really bad experience. And guys that have bad, like Nichushkin, same kind of thing, had a bad experience. He went home. And you know, Trampkin had such a bad experience, he doesn't want to come back anytime soon, which is, I mean, it's a big hit for the team. We've talked about it before, but to nail the pick, and that was 100% a betting pick. He's the guy that stood up and said, we want Trampkin, to get the pick here, have the pick pan out, and then to lose it, like, that's a real devastating blow for the team.
Did you happen to see, I was just flipping around the dials yesterday morning on TV, and I don't watch a ton of morning television, but Henrik Sedin was making an appearance on Breakfast TV to promote Jeans Day. I think it's coming up at the end of the week here. No. Did Henrik?
I saw the photo of
head
him
to toe in jean denim.
Suit. Yeah. The Canadian tuxedo.
Like, we see them around the rink, but even when they're at their most, like, I never see them in sweats. You'll see them in, like, workout gear.
Right.
You see a few guys sometimes, like, you know, sweats and stuff, like, leaving the rink. But, like, even when they're at their most casual, there's still, like, a little bit of Swedish Euro flair to them. And so,
to go to all see, Alberta and have the jean jacket like, and the jean
like, I've been around Henrik for 15, 16 years. Like, I don't pretend that I know him personally away from the rink, but I think I have a pretty good handle on who Henrik Sedin is. This kind of was troubling for me. It was mind-blowing a little bit to see Henrik head to toe in denim.
Who is he? Like, was it Edler that was beside him? Someone was beside him.
No, it was David Ostead at the White Caps, who gets a lot of people confuse those two or think that Edler and Ostead look a lot alike.
I should have known he wasn't checking his phone. So
yes, exactly.
I should have known. But yeah, I mean, that is, you know, jarring to see. Like it's jarring to see Drantz in jorts, as jarring as it is to see Henrik in that, you know, jean tuxedo that he had. So I didn't see the video. I just saw the pic making the rounds of the jean jacket and the jeans.
Now I want to see it. Like, I want him to wear that next year at some, just one day, just stroll through the room, head to toe in denim. All right, we're going to wrap things up here for this week. But again, throughout the offseason, we're here. Help us spread the word about the podcast. Retweets, much appreciated, as much as the likes are as well. I had somebody, when I opened it up to questions, Bot, said, who do you guys like in the NBA playoffs? Because, and he was quick to point out, that you and I planted our flag firmly on the hill of the Atlanta Falcons in the middle of Seahawk country here in the Pacific Northwest, ahead of the Super Bowl, and late into the third quarter, we were looking like geniuses, right? Like
28-3.
Yeah, we had
the end.
Jumped on board early and ridden through the NFL playoffs.
I was gassing up my back padding machine.
Oh, completely.
And getting ready to wheel it into the next podcast. Started up and just spend like the first 10 minutes of it like
gloating.
Automatically backing, you know, patting our backs and tongue bathing us.
Right.
Did not go well after that.
So now I'm kind of loath to make any sort of prediction because I'm still suffering the after effects of the Patriots' comeback there. But really, when you think of the podcast and the things that we have latched onto, they all leave us. Drantz.
Gone.
Trampkin.
Gone.
The Falcon Super Bowl hopes.
Gone.
Exactly. So
I don't
think I can go down this road anymore. Like, if I like the Houston Rockets, that's not going out on any great limb here.
It's just, it's the NBA. It's going to be the Warriors and it's going to be the Cavs. And it's like, it's almost frustrating to watch it all play out because, you know, like, let's just get to the ending. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a Raptors fan. Like, the first couple of years, they were playing at the Sky Dome and I had like season tickets and sat up in like 500 level and I would literally watch the games in the 500 level with binoculars.
No.
It was me and another buddy and we had big.
Well, you needed them to find Damon. You needed them to find Damon Stoudemire. If you were courtside, you needed them to find Damon Stoudemire.
But. And that's how we would go to the games and watch the entire game through our binoculars and be there for the whole season. So I'm a Raptors fan, right? And I'm also a Jays fan. And like one of the big humiliating moments of being a Jays fan is when Odor punches Batista. And it's like humiliating to, it's just like you never really live that down because he got the best of Batista and he hammered him. And it was like, our guy sucks. Like, this is brutal, like getting punched in the face. Last night, there was two such, and I had kind of bought in to this because I'm a fan. Like I try to have hope. Like none of my teams ever do. Like I'm also an Eagles fan. Like my teams always blow it. They always suck. Like I'm used to having my spirits crushed and being gutted. But there are times when I do buy in, right? So I kind of bought into this idea that, you know, the Cavs are vulnerable and LeBron's 32 now. And sure, he hasn't lost a playoff series in the East since 2009, but he's due to lose one, right? And he's played so much this year. The Raps are better. And then on like minutes into that game, there's like Lowry tries to pass. It's picked off. Kyrie Irving had, like, it was a brutal giveaway. Irving has it with LeBron on the court, and LeBron tells him in the motion of this play, dude, go hard to the net, hammer that off the backboard, and I'm going to alley-oop and dunk this shit. And Irving, you know, runs and just like with great velocity chucks it hard off the backboard. LeBron grabs it, slams it in, and I'm like, series, like, it's over. It's done. Like, you can't, there's like the punch. There's no coming back from that. There was another play late in the game, like the Cavs just rain threes down on the Raps. And there was a play late in the game where LeBron looks at takes DeRozan on, posts him up inside, and basically it made it look easy. And basically what he was saying was, to me, this is how I read it, yeah, you guys were killing you from the 3-point line this game. But if we wanted to post right. you up, we would be beating you this way all game long. And that's what would be. It was just super dispiriting. And that's kind of the NBA season. It's like, okay, let's just see the Cavs play the Warriors and get on with it.
Here's a little taste of you guys go, you do your video work for the next game. You figure out how to stop us on the perimeter.
Right.
This is how we're going to beat you next. Yeah, this is how we're going to beat you next game. Just a little sample, something to think about. All right, finally. And again, when we opened up to questions last night on Twitter, had some guy say, are you and Botch going to jump in a camper van and drive to Toronto for the NHL draft?
Well, the draft's in Chicago.
Well, that's the big problem in all of this. I like the idea of a road trip with you, Botch. I think it'd be fun. I like it. I like a good camper van. I do. You know, I don't need the 5-star. Like, I can get down and camper van my way around. I like a good road trip. But going to Toronto for the NHL draft when it's being conducted in Chicago, there is a fatal flaw in the plan. So, no, don't see that happening.
Chicago is closer. I mean, we can get there sooner.
Somewhere down the line, maybe a camper van. Maybe they'll sell you a camper van out at Eagle Ridge GM. Who knows? Again, if you're in the market for a vehicle, please start your search, eagleridgegm.com. They've been great supporters of us. And we ask that you support them as well. That's how these things work in this new era of media, as we find some sponsors for the podcast. And Eagle Ridge GM has been on board all season long. They're going to continue that way here in the off season. Podcast will get you up to speed each and every week on the goings on around the Vancouver Canucks, through the expansion draft, through the draft itself, and into free agency. But, again, if you're in the market for a vehicle, start your search online, eagleridgegm.com, and listen for details, because there is talk of another podcast live on location out at Eagle Ridge just ahead of the NHL draft. So in the next couple of weeks, and you're certainly invited. Don't have a date for you yet, but we'll pass that along when we do, and then we want you to lock it into your phone, circle it on your calendar, and show up like Beecher and some others did last time,
that's right? Yeah, Beecher was there.
He was there, front and center. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we should get it. Well, if he's there again, we have to get him on for a segment. No, I mean,
well,
that's right. Like, we haven't had a guest.
The Trampkin rule. Yes,
that's right.
Yes. So all due respect to Beecher, and he would make a fine guest. But yes,
we will not set the bar. Like, the rest of Vancouver can set the bar low. We will not be setting the bar low here on the podcast.
No, but this news of this week, certainly a blow to the podcast plans then.
But we need someone Trampkin-esque, right? To take the place.
We'll see where it goes. All right, we'll see what the playoffs bring here over the next week or so. We'll reconvene. We'll do it again. The podcast, you find us here each and every week on Province.